David, whether you have a few weeks old puppy or a senior who's seen multiple decades, any dog person like me knows the most valuable thing in the world is spending time with your pet.
Yep.
The farmer's dog makes it easy to keep them healthy, which can give you more quality years with your lovely dog.
Yeah, well, I've heard Farmer's Dog makes and delivers fresh, healthy dog food. And, you know, that's what everyone's looking for. It's recommended by vets, nutritionally balanced. It's made from human-grade ingredients, safe, clean kitchens. All that stuff matters.
Yeah. I mean, you love your dog. Why get the lousy food for your dog? Farmer's Dog is the best. Traditional dry and wet dog food options are extremely processed.
Sometimes
they use
dogs...
much lower quality. Yeah.
you put it in their bowl and they go, what is this kibble? And they knock it away. What is this canned goo?
Oh, yeah. I've had our dog, yeah, look at the bowl and then kind of crank its neck up and look at me. And it was like, really?
They go, really? Why don't you go first? You want a bite of this? Slop?
And it makes that sound.
Here you go, dog.
So Farmer's Dog isn't just higher quality food. They also send the food pre-portioned specifically for your dog based on their unique nutritional needs. It makes it easy to help your dog reach and stay at their ideal weight, David, and which is one of the biggest indicators of a full, healthy life. A fresh diet has been found to have all sorts of benefits, David, from healthier coat and skin, better breath, if you want to kiss your dog, and even easier digestion and smaller and better poops.
Let's look at a clip. It doesn't matter if your dog's young or old, it's always the right time to invest in their health for more happy years with your dog. Get 50% off your first box at farmersdog.com/fly.
Let the Farmer's Dog know we sent you. Use your code or click podcast after you sign up for your first box.
And now for a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Let's talk about hustle culture. You know, the whole rise and grind, go big or go home thing. It's a lifestyle that may not be for you, but one that your money can handle thanks to Betterment. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. How? Their automated technology optimizes your investments again and again. With Betterment, your money is taking ice baths at 5 a.m. while you get your well-deserved rest. Your money downs protein smoothies and automatically reinvests your dividends all before you head out the door. Your money's a workaholic, but you don't have to be because you've got Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed. Boo Buscemi, Steve Buscemi, friend of the show.
A friend of the show, what a treat. We got to know him, we meaning me and myself and I and David, got to hang out with him a lot at the in Washington, D.C. for the Sandler Mark Twain Award. And so we sang songs together, we hung out. Couldn't be a nicer guy. One of our great... I don't know. He's just been around a long time. When Steve Buscemi is in a movie, you're always happy. David?
Yeah. First of all, he's very interesting dude. He's very earnest. He jokes around, but he's got a very quiet coolness to him. He goes back to from right when he hit the scene that he's always had such a attention scene-stealing look. And he backs it up with great acting. He's a great guy to have around. He's in a lot of Sandler stuff. And I sort of met him through the Sandler verse, and then I just see him at different events, that old Happy Madison party. And so we've gotten to where we can shoot the shit, and it was a great time with him. Glad he did it.
Yeah, he's done movies with the Coen brothers. Kind of Fargo was the one that I think got him incredibly noticed. We talk about that movie.
Yeah.
And then he's directing a new movie. It's the second directing effort in 10 years. And he goes into that very interesting. He'll tell you all about that, which is fun. And he's just a nice, humble guy. He just has and a great sense of humor.
Yeah, we try to get him out of his shell and crack up. And we always have fun. Guys like that who are just innately cool dudes. And he's got a very good funny bone. So he liked it. We cracked up. Mm-hmm. I cracked up.
Yeah.
Without further ado, click play and then hear a commercial. When I did Grown Ups, oh my God, a few people remember. I heard some applause. Well, you were in Grown Ups, but the one I was in that, I don't know if you, this was the one. You were in the cast. Which one is that? Is that both of them or is that?
I was in both of them, yeah.
Okay, yeah. So the one where, but Dana, this is boring as fucking shit, but I'm mesmerized. Me and Steve will crack up. You're already mesmerized? That's good. Okay. So we're doing a scene where we're all around and it's nighttime and we're all drinking and the couples start to pair off and slow dance. And this Joe Walsh song comes on or something. And I, or not Joe Walsh, but Sentimental Lady. And I go, oh no. Oh, this is a good song. And I'm drunk and I get up and I sort of stumble around and then I interrupt Adam and Salma. And then I wind up falling down drunk, but it's a 7-page scene and we're all in it. So it's hard to shoot. So we shoot it all night one night and we get to my coverage and they go, it's getting light. We'll pick that up another time. And I'm like, another time, because I just had it all memorized because I'm doing it all night. I'm like, I'm kind of glad I'm last because I have a lot of lines. So 3 weeks later, McCartney is playing in Boston. We're pretty close. We might be in Swamp Squad.
Oh, so, I just do McCartney sounds.
Yes.
Sounds like,
oh, I thought he was here.
Everyone's looking around. When did he jump on? So I go, Chris Rock is in the movie. And I say, Chris, McCartney's in Boston tonight. And he goes, his ticket lady was my third grade teacher. And I said, oh my God. And he goes, let's call her right now. And he goes, we're all dialed in. I said, we're done around 6-7. We haul ass. We found exactly when he goes on. And then he goes, and he wants to say hi right before you. We're like, oh my God.
Wow.
So about right before the end of the day, it was maybe Jack or someone came into my trailer and goes, we're going to pick yours up tonight. I go,
God.
Pick up my what? And they go, remember
Jack,
that?
Hi,
yeah,
Jack.
Remember that scene you didn't finish? I'm like it's my fault. I go, yeah, I didn't finish it right. And he goes, I think tonight's a good night. I go, no, it's not. It's fucking Paul McCartney.
You're just not a worker. You're not a real worker.
Paul McCartney waited till midnight to go on. He's like, are they coming?
God, so, he's 81 and he's up half the night.
Yeah. So I go, keep him waiting. And then they go, I said, do not bring that fucking cast in to do all their shit again. I go, I'll do it. I said, I can't do that to them. So they gladly all scrammed. And then it was Sandler, you know, he's overseeing it. And then I'm doing it to, you know, a bunch of like tennis balls or whatever, the eye lines. And I do my whole 7 pages. I'm drunk. And so I come to Video Village. This is sort of the point of the story.
Yeah.
And I
can't wait.
And I'm like Adam, like, we got it. And yes, I haven't taken any classes, but yes, I'm really good. And I sit there and he's just looking at it going, And I go, are we watching the playback? And I'm behind him kind of chuckling like, this is working. And then he goes, were you drunker last time? It was a little different. I don't know if it's matching. And I'm like, so I go, play me back something from the last time, you know? And I was, and so we're trying to go, okay. And it was really hard to match the exact tone of the drunkenness. Sounds crazy, but I go, I'm going to go under on this one. And then I come back and then I go, okay, I'm going to go a little bigger. And we did it until it made sense. And now when you see the movie, you don't even notice, but it kind of fits in.
Oh, you notice. I noticed when I saw it.
That you go, he's medium
David
plus
is
drunk.
A little drunker in this line. 30 seconds later, you he's go, slightly less drunk.
Just play it. 6.5 Tito's and Diet Cokes. And I'm like, ooh, that's a big one. Okay, I can play that. And then so that just shows you, first of all, Adam's eye is always on the ball.
Yes.
And little things like that matter. And it's, you can't tell yourself when you're acting and you need someone else's eyes to go, it was good. I just don't think it's exactly what we had. So it took a little bit of a collabing right there. And then that's kind of fun when you finish and you feel like you got it right. And everyone goes, got it. And then you all go home and you go, got it. And you just knock it out.
I have two questions for you. Mm-hmm. Did you make it to the concert?
Not a fucking chance. It was until 2 a.m. we did that.
All right. Well, I guess my second question is not a question. It's a comment about Adam, because I agree with you. He's always so involved in, like, you know, all the films. And I said to him, why don't you ever direct?
Yeah.
You know, I said, and he said he doesn't want a location scout. Like, that was the
extra work. Yeah.
That was the reason.
He works morning, noon, and night anyway.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
There's block. He's reblocking. He's doing things that directors all do. So Yeah. I think he's listened to so much anyway, and it's sort of just, you know, given that he's going to have a lot to say. But I guess you're right. It's that extra.
Well, it's a little bit like Saturday Night Live. If you write a sketch, you're sort of the de facto director. We had Davey Wilson. He's setting up shots. He's got just, it's live. So that it's not, but you're still kind of the boss of your sketch. You're the producer and the director. If you wrote it, you're casting it with other cast members. And Sandler is like that. He's like a co-director. I mean, he's sort of, everyone knows he's the overarching creative force. He's got his eye on every ball. So I think the way he did it was brilliant. You know, I don't think anybody else in history has done that many movies where they are, in a sense, an auteur.
Right.
It is Adam, you know, and
he puts his stamp. I mean, definitely when he the fact that he actually cares, and even when we're doing movies where you think this will probably not get good reviews just because they have a sort of bias, he still puts everything into it. And really cares. I mean, another grown-up story is, do you have a half hour? Is
we'll get to you in a minute, Steve.
No, Steve.
The listener is out March 29th. I'm just going to say.
My real question.
That's all I wanted.
Everyone just jump off
March
now,
29th, if you want a great ride in a movie theater, a sophisticated adult drama, beautifully done by Steve Buscemi, boom. Your publicist now, right now, is actually having a glass of champagne, even if they're in AA. Right.
They go, Steve, you can check out for the rest of this. Right. And now David Spade. So
now we're going to have David for
I want to ask Steven, when did he get fitted for the full body cast? And what was his reaction to going, wait, what do I do here? Or do you see it in the script and go, uh-oh?
Yeah, I could tell I was
yeah,
in that one. Even on the day, like, because I remember, and the whole cast was there, you know, because it's like one of the big scenes. And it was and it started to rain, and they got the scene, and then everybody just scatters. I thought, these are like, I thought we were friends. Like, are we?
You're left out there in the rain.
Nobody's checking on me. Like, everybody just like scatters. And then the AD, you know, and then I thought I was done, and the AD said, well, I think they want to get a shot where the dog comes up and sniffs your balls. And I actually got mad. I went, are you fucking kidding me?
Are your real hands in the real sticking straight up by goalpost, or do they put fake hands in there so you don't have
they
to
put fake hands in
Thank
it.
You, God.
No, I couldn't move.
Thank you, Jesus. I thought it was real until right now. I just went, wait a second. Could you hold your hands up all day? Because also, the thing about it, when you're like that, like if I was seen like that, I go, well, obviously they're going to shoot me out first. And no one even gives a fat fuck. They're like, nope. Oh, Buscemi, we never picked up. We'll get him at the end. Just sit there in the rain. We'll come to you while you're rotting and getting rusty. Yeah, it is tough. Movies are so complex, and especially grown-ups, you got 55 leads.
Oh my God, there's so many people, yeah, that are on set, and I don't know how the producers and the ADs do it, but they somehow manage.
And just for the people, young people listening that are in the Groundlings or whatever and aspiring to have a career in television or movies, we understand these are first world problems.
Sure, stupid.
but the thing is, you're on a movie set. I would say the most tired I ever been, I was, because it was one of those 21-hour days. And they said, okay, Garth's going to go in the diner. I'm going to do this thing I worked on for weeks, this dance. And I'm going, and I was young and fit. I go, I am as tired as I've ever been in my life. I've been up like 40 hours. And here's your shot for eternity. Go for it.
Oh, at so the that, very end of the night, they get you.
Yeah, well, that's with Steve's film. I'm assuming, like Woody Allen would do, like night shoots would end at 8 o'clock. Let's say, you know, I think we should get some Chinese. You know, did you were you able to have civilized hours in a sense for the listener? March 29th.
Pretty
Thompson.
Pretty much, but we know we wanted to. We knew we had nighttime shots, so that by the end of the week, we were going to be shooting outside. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we started the beginning of the week, normal hours. And then each day we would just start a little bit later. By the end of the week, it was It was night shoots.
Going to splits, lingo.
Going to split. You know, I wasn't going to say splits.
Yeah, splits is lingo, and I want the people want to hear it.
Hmm.
I had to learn.
Hey, qué pasa? Qué pasa?
Is that what they say when you walk into sushi?
I think that's what's happening in Spanish. Qué pasa? Qué pasa? David Ospero.
I had a difficulty learning German in high school. It's a very tough language. I did it through textbooks and a teacher. I would have rather had Rosetta Stone.
You know, you not being able to learn German is very, very interesting.
But stupid. Now, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program. We know this. Available on desktop as an app. Truly immerses you in the language you want to learn.
Yeah, this is planning a trip to Italy. And I think Rosetta Stone is my ticket to speak a better language.
Hey,
I want a pizza pie. But I'll be saying it in Italian. Hey, I want a pizza pie. Sounds like
that's better
English, but it's still that was
they
Italian.
Say, do you want to sound perfectly fluent or do you want to sound like Ratatouille?
Honestly, trusted experts for 30 years, David, with millions of users and 25 languages offered. You want to hear some?
Yeah, the
Spanish,
big ones.
Spanish, French, Italiano, Sturman, Korean, Chinese, Chinese,
careful,
Dutch, Arabic, Polish.
Fast language acquisitions, Rosetta Stone.
Should I read that straight?
It immerses you in many ways. No English translation, so you really learn to speak, listen, and you think in the language, Dana. That's the hard part.
No, I do like their process. The intuitive process picks up a language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. It's designed for long-term retention, David, because we all took Spanish in high school, and all we can say is donde está la biblioteca.
Yeah.
I can find a library, but nothing else. Rosetta Stone is a game changer.
It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. It's convenient. We said the desktop, the app options, audio companion. You can do it offline. It's amazing value. Lifetime membership has all 25 languages. For any and all trips and language needs in life, that's lifetime access to 25 language courses Rosetta Stone offers for 50% off. That is a steal. I'll say that in English, a steal.
Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, Fly on the Wall listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off.
Visit rosettastone.com/fly. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/fly today.
Now your ideas don't have to wait. Now they have everything they need to come to life. Dell Technologies and Intel are creating technology that loves ideas.
Loves expanding your business, evolving your passions. We push what technology can do, so great ideas can happen right now. Find out how to bring your ideas to life at dell.com/welcome to now. First of all, we were watching your movie this morning. This is The Listener, right, Dana?
The Listener is a heavy film. It's very, very interesting. The conceit of it, this volunteer helpline woman. I mean, we'll talk to a minute. It is your movie that Steve directed. It's compelling. It just kind of captures the angst, post-pandemic angst, or just human angst and sadness. It's extremely well done and well acted by Tessa Thompson, who is the only actor in the film. You go ahead, Steve.
Well, she's the only actor that we see in the film.
Right. Thank you.
There's an amazing cast of callers. Yeah, she plays a home helpline worker. She works the night shift. She works from home. And she gets all these calls during the night that she navigates. And we have a wonderful cast that of the callers, but you only hear their voices, and you only see Tessa on screen for the duration of the film. And she's amazing.
Because they are characters also, and they... I was watching it with someone, and the first guy that called in, she was more into the guy. She was like, I like his voice. I like his tone. I like what he's saying. I like this guy. And so it's actually a big challenge to be a voice and to have any sort of resonance or impact. And Tessa's obviously great on her end. she's got a very calm, soothing voice, and she's, you know, she could get very riled, and it seems she's got a very, you have to have that sort of job. That's what her whole job is. And very interesting.
I think what she worked with was, you know, because we did everything we could to make it cinematic. You know, if this was pre-pandemic and she was at a call center where she was, you know, kind of tethered to a desk, I don't know how I would have made that film. But because she is able to work at home, we purposefully found a location that had a nice flow to it, that she could walk around, be in different rooms, go outside. And what's amazing about Tessa is that, her voice was, you know, she always tried to keep, you know, like a calm level tone, but then, but you could see on her face if she was upset about something that somebody said or worried. She had a lot of these micro expressions that, you know, sort of gave you an inkling of what she was going through herself.
And you know what you really captured, which you do a lot when you're young anyway, where you'll like a girl or something, and then you'll talk on the phone at night. It's very intimate. And these two people, Tess's character and the strangers calling in, they don't know each other. It's very dim. It's the middle of the night, and they're having this intimate conversation, and the voice actors immediately, the first one just sounded very, just extremely real. Like you're eavesdropping, you know, you captured that. So
thank you. Thank you so much. I appreciate you guys watching it.
Yeah. You know, the voices, first of all, I kind of want to ask you one other question about this, but when I was on the phone as a kid or dating or doing anything in life, the voice was kind of a fingerprint. So when I think of women I've dated in the past or present, a voice is one thing I really appreciate in people because they are fingerprints. It's so unique. And I think I was brainwashed growing up, like trying to talk to girls on the phone and talking for hours with someone you liked. And you always remember that. And sometimes people get older and everything, but you know their voice right away.
Right.
And so when I go into 7-Eleven and if I ask for something, they go, "Oh, I was waiting to hear you talk. That is you." You know, it's kind of interesting. So when you have people call in, it's very powerful to have the right person with the right, because you have to make them all a little different. And
that's true. Yeah.
That's a trick. And then you have to make, for people that don't know, that sort of indie budget is like, if you have one location, what you were saying is you have to use some trickery and some movements and some things to keep it alive. And you did that. And that's the hard part with one subject and one location. It's less expensive, but it's hard to keep it going. So to make a good movie is tough.
We also shot the movie in 6 days because Tessa was still working on Westworld, the HBO show that.
Oh, okay.
And that was her hiatus. She had 7 days off and she chose to work with us. You know, we were trying to find a window and she's so busy with other films and other things, but she had that 1 week off. So we shot the entire film in that 1 week, which was doable because it is a confined space and one actor, but still it was a bit of a challenge.
And another interesting layer frequency. I don't know. I went to state school. is this idea when you take on a role, like when you see a teacher outside of school, you go, they're just normal. What are they doing? So in this case, her character has their own issues and yet she's in the helper mode. It's like when you have a therapist and you kind of wonder what's going on with them, you know? So that was a whole nother layer to the film that the people don't, you know, she's just in the helper mode and then she's in that mode, but she had so many other issues herself. So,
yeah, I mean, I think most of the people who do that work have been through it themselves. Mm-hmm. And part of the conceit of the film is that Tessa's character, she breaks protocol because you're not really supposed to tell, you know, your personal story to callers, but she does so for this one call where this woman is in crisis. And she reveals, you know, a lot about herself in order to help or save the person that she's talking with. But I know what you mean about the, you know, seeing people out of context, like seeing your therapist on the street. Or I remember when I was a kid, I went to Catholic school, and I remember one time during lunch seeing my teacher, who was a nun, eat a sandwich. Mm. And I was blown away. What? You eat?
It's true. You never see them eat. They never eat.
I saw Pastor Jerry. I was raised Lutheran. Pastor Jerry at the mall, and he's wearing desert boots. And I go, Pastor Jerry wears desert boots? Because those were very cool back in the days. You know,
I saw a rabbi on a pogo stick. And I was like, what are you? You're never on that.
Right. I know.
You know, Steve, I'm looking at this. There's so much Dana about Steve that we love because he's a... actually, one more question about the movie before I get into your illustrious...
I have a question about the movie, too.
Okay. My last one is, being a well-known actor and a name, and I don't want to hype you up too bad, but, you know, you direct and you're a well-liked guy out there. Is it still hard to get a small movie off the ground?
Yes. This is the first film I've directed in 15 years. And there were others along the way that I tried to do. This one was, you know, hard to get off the ground as well. But I think the climate out there is tough for any filmmaker. But where there's a will, there's a way. And we did it.
You got through it. Yeah.
Single location helps with the budget. Yeah. And were you like, I was just you're making your film, first film in a long time. And now it's digital playback and you'll get 6 days. And so you're with your DP or your producer or whatever, and you're looking at stuff. And are you going at some point, holy shit, this is awesome. Or you're being self-critical, or I just wonder what you want us who will enjoy the movie. What did you want us to feel? What were you trying to reach for? And do you feel that you got it?
Yeah, I wanted to create this really intimate atmosphere and have Tessa's, the location be totally her world, where you're getting clues about her. And for the audience to want to lean in and be involved. And it is exciting to see that on set. It's also overwhelming because there's so much dialogue in it, and so I'm constantly thinking, you know, I try not to think of the editing process while I'm doing it, but that's things that you have to think about, and is there enough movement, when should it be still, when or if the camera should move, when should Tessa get up and move around. And so we spent a lot of time actually working that stuff out before we shot it.
Did you ever once on the set after a take just go, what are you doing?
And like Sandler? Yeah. You sound like Sandler. Are you catching the big game or making big mods, going on that first date or installing that first break kit? Binging that new show or watching install videos? When you're a real car lover, the choice is obvious. eBay Motors has you covered with over 122 million parts to fit your number one ride or die.
Brake kits, turbochargers, LED headlights, exhaust kits, bumpers, roof racks, and engines. Whether you're into the speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has all the parts you need for the ride you love. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash.
And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time. Or your money back. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Looking to save on delivery? DashPash from DoorDash is your door to $0 delivery fees and savings you can't get anywhere else. DashPass is an exclusive membership with DoorDash that gets you unlimited $0 delivery fees on eligible orders and members-only deals and discounts. Whether it's food from your favorite restaurants, grocery from across town, or anything in between, DashPass is the most affordable way to get everything you need delivered right to your door. With $0 delivery fees and lower service fees on eligible orders, DashPass makes it easy to save at restaurants, grocery stores, and all your local favorites on DoorDash. DashPass pays for itself in 2 orders on average. Plus, DashPass gives you special access to exclusive promotions and menu items, all for $9.99 a month. Get more from delivery for less with DashPass. $0 delivery fees and reduced service fees on eligible DoorDash orders. Sign up for Dash Pass today and get your first 30 days free if you're a new member. Subject to change. Terms apply. Reality TV has hit a new high on Hulu. From executive producer Jimmy Kimmel, the all-new Hulu original series, High Hopes, is finally here for your viewing pleasure.
The Hulu original reality series follows two budding entrepreneur brothers and their hilarious half-baked employees at one of the fastest-growing cannabis dispensaries in Hollywood. This workplace comedy showcases the highs, and even more highs, of the competitive marijuana industry.
More than just co-workers, the owners and bud tenders in High Hopes are one dope family.
You'll fall in love with these quirky characters as they pursue career aspirations, love, and fame, all under a slightly hazy cloud.
All episodes of the new reality series High Hopes are now streaming only on Hulu. I want to ask a question because Steve's been famous for a long time. So it's hard. You're okay. Yeah. I get to talk to Steve. It was so much fun hanging out with you and at Sandler's thing in DC, you know, because you're one of the people I'd say, Steve Buscemi's here. I'm doing this thing with Steve Buscemi. And it's like, what? You know, it's
They love him.
But here's something maybe you've never been asked. Who's more talented, Joel or Ethan Coen? You have 3 seconds.
Go.
They're both hacks.
Who likes feet more, Quentin Tarantino or anyone else in the planet? Is he like feet, or is that like a fake thing, or is that like a joke?
I don't know.
If
he did know, he wouldn't tell you.
Well, no, he can like feet. It's fine. I like things.
Yeah, I just don't know if that's how much or if
we've got a what's it called when the witness is being very troublesome?
I'm a hostile witness.
Hostile witness.
Yeah. We were trying to trend, Steve. No one knows we exist.
We have a sweetheart deal with Feet Finder. Okay, I'm reading this. This is what I read about Steve Buscemi because there's so much to know about him.
I know.
This guy goes, frequently plays fast talkers, frequently plays cowardly characters. It's funny. And often characters mixed up in crime.
Yes.
All true. A little generic, but all true. They're just, Steve's in so many good movies, and he's someone that everyone thinks is cool, which is really what I'm going for.
Mm.
Not there yet. But I think like Con Air, cool fucking movie, just a random movie.
Yeah.
Con Air, fun, big movies. I miss those kind of, you get to work with Nicolas Cage and his whole Nicolas Cage thing. It's great. You remember that movie?
That had a great cast. John Malkovich. Danny Trejo.
Can't shoot tell that he's lying. No, I'm working on a Malkovich. Nicolas Cage. Why, God, why?
Dana, to bore the shit out of Steve again, and not to bring it back to me, and it's not about me. I do not care about me at all.
I'm timing you this time.
I read 3 times for his part in Con Air.
For whose part?
Yours. And you probably was an offer. I'm sure you got offered it while you were milling it out and swishing it around. They were dragging me to the valley back and forth going, do it like this, you monkey. And then they go, no, we got our guy. Thanks, bye.
I never knew that. Wow. You would have been great.
I have a... Steve, when's the last time you auditioned for a movie?
Yeah, good one.
Oh, wow. It's been a while. I remember auditioning for a movie and then reading one of the parts and then asking the casting director, can I read for the lead? I was like, well, and she looked at me and she said, oh no, we're going to get a name for that. And that's the first time I ever heard that expression. We're going to get a name for that. Like, well, I have a name. And then I thought, oh, I see. I have to get my name known. I didn't know it worked that way. I just thought if you were...
Oh, it's so many things I auditioned for were offers out to people, and I was jumping around to kill time to scare them, like, we're having auditions right now. I mean, no one's good yet. Don't worry. No one's good yet.
I hated when you walked into an audition room, and I saw all these... This is in the 80s. Baby-faced men with no chins. Like, I go, okay, I get it. Oh, I get the memo.
Oh, that's your look?
Yeah. Yeah. They're all lookalikes of me. No chin, baby face. Okay, cherubic. I get it. But they, I was 0 for 150 at one point. 150 auditions. I've got, one time the agent called me. You didn't get it, and you frightened them.
Oh, I remember auditioning for Barry Levinson once and reading, you know, reading this part. And he liked it. He went, that was good. It was good. Now, can you do it? And he gave me a very specific direction. Mm. Did it again, exactly the same way. And we both looked at each other. I was mortified. He was embarrassed. And I said, that wasn't that different, was it? He went, no. Okay.
Okay. You know, can't take some direction.
My fucking acting coach, shocked, yes, I had one. They said they might give you direction just to see if you can take direction. A lot of people can't. I'm like, why not? And they're like, it's shocking. They can't. They go, Steve Buscemi. They just start listing people. But honestly, it's like you just say that and you go, oh, I would just change it. And some people are coached so hard, yeah, or they're with their teacher or whatever, and they go, this is the right way to do it. Even to the director, they're like, I've got the right way. You don't.
Right.
And they're just testing you. But I've done that. I bomb every commercial audition, even more embarrassing.
Do the Coen brothers give you a line by line reading? Well, like, say the line like that, or how are
they? You know, their writing is so specific, you know, that they really want you to, you know, say what's written. And so there's very little. I think I improvised something once on Fargo and I was nervous about it, but they liked it. But I remember in the beginning when I first started working with them, they, I think in Miller's Crossing, they just wanted my character to be even, you know, he was the fastest talker that I think I ever.
It's hard with lines to do fast talking.
Yeah. And they just wanted it even more. Like, they just wanted it more intense or more shrill. And, I remember doing the scene where I, you know, all I do is talk. Gabriel Byrne had like two words. Then I talk. He would just wait till I stopped talking. And then he would say two words. And there was a whole casino of people behind me on my coverage. And I remember on one of the takes, my late wife, Jo, she came to visit me on set, but I didn't know she was there yet. And as I'm doing the dialogue with the whole casino, you know, extras behind me, I see her head poke out, you know, behind somebody to watch, and I just stop talking.
Oh, it threw you, yeah.
And then, all right, back to one, you know, and it would be a lot of grumbling. And she felt horrible. I could see the look on her face. She knew what happened, and she just ducked back out.
Because your brain just switches. You go, wait.
It just, I was like, oh, Jill.
Turns you off. You know, Dana, I don't know if you remember this one. Of course you do. I don't know who you played in this. Maybe Travolta. One of my favorite sketches was Welcome Back, Kotter. Tarantino's Welcome Back, Kotter.
When John hosted.
John was playing John. Okay.
John Travolta hosted, and it was Welcome Back, Kotter, directed by Quentin Tarantino. And at the end of it, because Michael McKean was on the show, and they had Lenny and Squiggy pop out, remember? And then I came out at the very end as Mr. Pink and said something like, up your hole with a jelly roll, something like that. I remember in the rehearsal, rehearsal show, I was late getting out there, and I didn't think it was my fault. I thought I was cued late. But you probably don't remember this, David, but afterwards, you did give me a little shit about that.
Shut the fuck up, did I?
You gave me a little bit. You did. Yes. You were like, hey, you know, Johnny on the spot there. What happened? Something like that. And I went, they didn't kill me, you know.
How dare I? I was nervous. I was Horseshack and I was in character. Mr. Cotter. I got to play Horseshack. I loved it. I thought that was such a funny idea, funny sketch.
It was great.
Yeah. One of my all-time memorable ones. That's fun you got to be in that. And I just watched your monologue of character actors. That was a good idea. You were, people in the audience, cast members were character actors asking you how to be a lead.
Wait, do you remember this? The monologue?
Yeah, they said like, hey, you're a lead, but you play a lot of character actors, but now you're a leading man. I play the girl with all the bags at a store that's the best friend. And then she falls out of frame. And then Kristen Wiig is like, I'm the girl running from the killer with a knife, but I don't know where anyone is. Steve, are you here? So everyone was playing a character and they were asking for your advice to get past being a character actor. I thought it was pretty clever. I thought that was good.
That was good. I should watch that again because I totally blanked that out.
I'll send you a link.
Thanks.
All right, let me ask you a question.
But now that you say now that you describe it, I do remember it. Yeah.
I mean, it is a blur because you've got 13 sketches. You've hosted, I think, twice.
Twice, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to remember every nook and cranny, but it was a good job. I thought that was interesting.
I like what I remembered about the first time hosting during the dress rehearsal. I came out to do the monologue and I spotted a friend of mine from high school sitting in the front row. And again, it was just like seeing my wife on set.
Yeah.
I looked at him and I was like, hey, it's Eddie. And I was like, ah, fuck. What's my, like, I don't know what to do now.
Mm-hmm. On top of your nerves, you see that throws you off.
So scary.
One take. That's the hard part.
I know.
You're like, let me start over. Nope.
But thank God it was a dress rehearsal. And then for the show, I just went, just told myself, just don't look at anybody. Just avoid eye contact. Yeah.
So what a run you had in the 90s. I mean, and then the SNL calls. You'd been in at least five giant movies, Reservoir Dogs, Pulp Fiction. When did Fargo come out?
Yeah, that came out like in 96. I was surprised that I got the call for it because I didn't think I had really done enough to like warrant me being like that people would even know me. But John Turturro was also on that year. And I thought, oh, is this the year that they're like going after independent film actors or something? And I was like, I'm so thrilled to like get it. But I was nervous that I think I suggested, because in the opening monologue, it was some monologue about my name, Steve, and something, you know, it was, and it just wasn't me. And I was nervous about that. So I sort of addressed that. And then I suggested something. I can't remember who came up with the idea that we were going to, like, I was going to take suggestions from the audience and do like an improv with the rest of the cast. And then I would just insert scenes from movies that I was in. But the ulterior motive was, to remind people I was in Fargo or Reservoir Dogs. I'm nervous that people wouldn't know, like, well, who was this guy? But I was glad that they changed it. I was very sort of shy to say, do I have to do this opening monologue? Can we change it? And Lauren was really open to it and receptive. But that first time you host, it's just so mind-boggling. I was so anxious and I didn't know if I was allowed to say anything or contribute. And even though they were asking me, like, is there anything that you like to do? Or do you have any special talents? Can you sing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whatever you want.
Right. Did you feel like you're being a problem if you say too much on a set?
Yeah. Yeah. And then also, like, what do I know? Like, you're the experts.
Yeah. You put yourself in their hands. I think they just test you to say, we have a sketch we've been sitting on, but we need someone that can speak Russian, or we need someone that can, you know, sing. And you need just dialects and weird shit. And you go, I can juggle. They go, okay, we can put that in something. And then that helps.
Did Lorne calm you down, or is he sort of imposing in his own way? But normally he would really take a host. You go to dinner with him. You'll be nervous on the dress rehearsal, and then on air, it'll all just come together.
He's kind of both. He's very intimidating and comforting at the same, kind of at the same time, because he's so calm, that it, like, and it's, no, this is what we do and you'll be fine. And it's like, okay, I'll believe you.
Do you, we had an old movie you did was called Airheads. I saw it again on the flight because we had lovely Brendan Fraser on, who was a super sweetheart. He's great. And then, or Sandler, for seeing Airheads again, because I went and saw it on Broadway and like 69th, wherever there's that little theater in New York during, I think it was at SNL. And it, I saw the whole thing again. Pretty fun to see the whole thing again. And Billy Madison, of course, is such a big one that people remember you from, you know.
I did one day on that movie. On
Billy. And everyone remembers it. Is that you when you crossed the list of kill who to kill, that thing?
And that, yeah, yeah. The,
so I, memorable.
he calls me up and he apologizes for his bullying behavior in high school. And then I cross his name off.
The list of people to kill?
And to kill. And then I, for no reason at all, I just put on lipstick. Which that was my favorite part.
You know, we went.
Do you think? I mean, we went being the character actor is great.
We saw Sandler tape his thing. I thought I might see that he's doing his stand-up special.
I know.
And Bridget was there.
Yeah.
Veronica Vaughn, the teacher in Billy Madison, and and I said, "You get to be for history." In one of Farley's funniest things, saying that Veronica Vaughn is one fine piece of ace. And then Billy goes, you weren't with her. And he goes, I had a couple fun nights with her. And he goes, no, you didn't. He goes, no, I didn't. Or whatever he says. It's so funny.
It's very, very, very crisp.
Yeah, it was like, yeah. He plays the bus driver in Billy Madison. Yeah. So funny.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's fun. It's fun to be a part of even like that one scene you did. Just everyone remembers it.
I loved, and you know, yeah, and Chris was in Airheads. And I remember when we did the read through, and afterwards, Chris said to me, there's a part in Airheads where, you know, like my character gets angry and I'm like yelling at Adam. And Chris says to me, wow, Steve, when you were yelling that one time, you sounded just like you did in Reservoir Dogs. And I kind of looked at him like, what are you saying? And I realized Chris really was that way. Like when he had that sketch on SNL.
Yeah.
He was, oh, God, what? You know, remember when you were in the Beatles?
Yeah.
He really was that way, kind of.
But he was excited, I'm sure, to see you.
I know.
Yeah, it's fun.
And I just, you know, and I kind of looked at him and he looked at me and then we like just laughed. But it was a really funny thing from the stage.
Yeah, he is a sweetheart.
Was Fargo the one you get asked about the most? Only because it won Best Picture, right?
It was No, it's The Big Lebowski.
And that was another.
And it took a few years for that to happen because that was the one that followed Fargo. And I think critics like didn't know what to make of it at the time. And it kind of fell through the cracks. But then like 5 years later, I would start to get these like college kids come up to me and mention it because they watched it on VHS like over and over. And then in 10 years time, it was. And then it got to be where I knew the Lebowski fans, like somebody would come up to me on the street and they'd be about to say something. And I'd say, shut the fuck up, Donnie. And they'd like look at me like, oh, yeah, well, wow, it is you.
Yeah. God, I'm telling you, I hear about that. Like people, I'm not in it, but people go, God, have you seen The Big Lebowski? Oh, like one of my, when they're listing movies they like and comedies, and it just really did resonate.
Yeah. Hey, I'm the dude, man.
Jeff Bridges is such a stud. Such a stud.
Jeff Bridges, I always say that when he became a cowboy actor, he always sounded like he just had a hoagie. I'm going to do a take here in a minute, but I just had a big deep fried sandwich. Jeff now, if he listens to our podcast, he just, once he did True Grit, and then he just
stayed.
His voice got gravelier. Well, he's just sort of, he went post-acting. I think some people, if you see Hell or High Water, he's being so playful in that. It's almost like Anthony Hopkins in the one he got the Oscar for a couple of years ago. So kind of like beyond acting, they're just playing. I don't know what to describe. He's like, let's get a giddy up on this car. I don't know. In the Hell or High Water, I went, oh, he jumped the shark. He's not acting anymore. Do you know what I mean, Steve, in a way?
Yes, he's just become whatever it is. You know, he just.
Rules are out
the
window.
When's the most in the pocket you feel you've ever been? Like in a role, like, okay, this is the most I'm not thinking that I'm acting in a way, or I'm just feeling so, so great in each take, if it ever happens.
Well, no. I mean, the first feature that I directed, Trees Lounge, was a character that I wrote for myself that kind of was like an exaggerated version of me, but it was me. And but it was weird because I was also directing it, and I always get very anxious when I direct. So it was hard to really enjoy it, you know, fully in the moment. If somebody else was directing, I think I would have felt like, oh yeah, I'm nailing this. Otherwise, I'm just thinking about the rest of the day and just wanting to get through a scene, make sure I got it right. But yeah, my anxiety, I think, just gets in the way.
Wait a minute, an actor with anxiety? I mean, and self. You're telling me a brilliant actor has self doubt and anxiety, except for Brando, maybe. I don't know, but everybody else was a little shaky. I don't know. Hard to place Brando.
I'll bet he was insecure. Brando, no.
Well, he got the earpiece at some point, so I think he was like, "I'm sick of memorizing lines. It's too stressful."
Not giving a fuck is another way to do this thing, yeah. You know?
No, I'm saying the word anxiety, I didn't know growing up, or I would have said it every day. But I think now that you give people this word, like kids, they're like, I'm anxious at school. I'm like, well, no fuck. I've been anxious since the day I was born till right now. Like, it's a very rough life out there. And they're like, I don't want to do my homework. It gives me anxiety. No shit. Like, everything does.
Oh, I had panic attacks before I do stand up, but I didn't know I was having a panic attack.
Yeah, you don't know what it's called. You're just like, I was.
And I'd give it a name, and then I'd have to go talk to a therapist for $225 an hour. Maybe you talk her down to $200. Well, that's enough personal information.
Before tip.
But yeah, everybody is anxious now and depressed. Steve?
True. We can now we know what we are.
We know we're screwed up and we have vocabulary. Before I let you go, Steve, because you're a wonderful guy, I'm,
and you're doing 12 other podcasts after this for the listener.
You know, the good thing about Steve is he's not totally out there on everything. Like, that's the interesting mystery of Buscemi. He's just kind of cool, lays back a little bit, doesn't smother us.
I think it's unintentional, but yeah, he's effortlessly cool. And the fact that you're, I mean, I'll just throw this out here because it's not common knowledge to everybody that you were a firefighter who dreamed of becoming an actor.
Yeah.
Who became an actor. 9/11 happens, and then you apparently volunteer and you're going into the rubble with the firefighters. Not to bring up such a dark subject, but that's an extraordinary thing for a human being to have done, you know?
Well, thank you. No, cool. Yeah, because I was a firefighter for a few years in the early 80s. And then, you know, as the years went by, I got further and further away from it and lost touch. But then 9/11, yeah, it just put me back in touch. Mm-hmm. And I felt really honored that they would even let me come back and work with them, with my my company, Engine 55. And I had access. But I know so many people who would have done the same thing that wanted to be there, but just couldn't get in there. And I had the opportunity and the access because I used to be on the job, and I felt very honored to, you know, that I was able to do that.
It's hard for any of us to imagine that scene and what you went through, and you were invisible in a sense with the gear and everything. No one. No, hey, that's the Fargo guy.
You know what's weird is that, you know, I still had my turnout coat and my helmet and boots, and so I went there thinking that I could blend in. But I had been off the job like since the mid-80s, and all the equipment changed and the bunker gear.
You look like Curious George or something.
So I kind of stood out anyway. And then so people were like kind of looking at me like, Who is this guy? Why doesn't he have
a time machine,
a relic from the past? Oh, wait a minute. It's that guy. It's that actor. Yeah.
You know, Dana,
oh, that's funny.
He did that anonymously, and he helped for weeks. In a related story, I brought cookies down and had tipped off TMZ to follow me. And then later and I was in full makeup. And then,
hey man, you both are heroes.
And I sent them a bill.
You're different kinds of heroes. I want to ask Steve a question because I don't know if this is true either. Because I was a David and I were pipsqueaks in high school. Like I graduated. I was probably 125.
Me too.
But I heard you wrestled at 105 on the varsity.
Oh, really?
But you got bigger than that, right? Were you that a freshman, 105? Or?
I know. I did that up until my senior year. Maybe I went up another
105?
I don't think so.
105?
Yeah, that's crazy. I know.
Were you your height?
I was pretty wiry and I was pretty strong for my weight. I did pretty good during the year, like in the team matches. But then in the tournaments, I always choked.
When you started wrestling guys, was it harder? He says the girls a little easier, and then they started putting me up against guys when I got to 110.
Then it was two girls versus Steve, and he'd take them down. Three girls, and it was getting hard. And then they had a 87-pound guy. No, but you were good. I mean, you were actually, you would seem like the kind of guy who would be good at wrestling. I don't know why I think that. But yeah, your intellect and kind of, I think wiry people are secretly strong.
I was okay. I had a great coach, Mr. Earl, and his son Richie Earl was my wrestling partner. So, and like he was like the best on the team. So it kind of rubbed off on me. I had one secret move called the reverse cradle. And if I got you in it, if I got you in the reverse cradle, you know, it was like a surprise. And I actually beat some like guys who were probably better than me. But then, you know, that's why I would choke in the tournaments, because then you wrestle these same people again.
Oh, they're on to the old reverse cradle.
A one trick.
It always seemed a little close quartery in a way. You ever wrestling a guy and all of a sudden your face was right up against his junk and you're going, why am I doing this?
It's very homoerotic wrestling. It is.
Okay.
You know,
let's look at a clip.
It's part of the appeal.
It's part of the appeal. It does get a diverse audience.
Yes.
Yes. That's good. Yeah. All right, Dana, what do we do with Steve? We let him go?
Well, we could do hours because of he doesn't need our help. But yeah, he's Steve Buscemi. Yep. He's a national treasure. Mm-hmm. I'm going to use that as a, because you've just been around so long. And if I see you in a movie, I'm just happy.
Oh. Yeah, you're like this guy.
It's this guy. And I think when you are in your lane, I don't know who your peers are. I don't know if it's Christopher Walken. These are older people, but. There's the cool factor. You're not a pretty boy in front of a movie doing all the press. You're just the guy who goes in and you can't take your eyes off that guy. You know, I mean, it's like you weren't in Fargo. It was like, it didn't feel like you were acting. You weren't an actor in that movie.
They're like, they got a real guy to do this.
Where'd they get this? I had that once with Rip Torn. I saw a movie. Where'd they get this guy off the street? He was so good in this movie. And I think you have that vibe about you.
Thank you. So I'm not a pretty boy. That's what you're saying.
Well, no. I'm saying you're ruggedly handsome.
Thank you. Thank you. I agree.
Do you think David's a pretty boy?
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you. I've gotten away with every time I date someone, it's Beauty and the Beast in every article. I'm like, I enough for this. Like, just why not just say I'm
okay? You
don't look
like a beast.
They go, yuck. That's like exclamation is the headline. I'm like, all right. You can't do that. You can't do that with the girls. You can't say, look at this great looking guy with this dog. It's like, you can't. You can do it with me. All right, Steve, that's really what I wanted to get off my chest. Okay. Thank you for talking to us. You're a stud, and we'll talk soon, hopefully.
Thank you. Enjoyed both. It. I love you both, and thank you
we
so
love
much.
You. I hope we see you.
Thank you.
Okay, see you, bud. This has been a presentation of Odyssey. Please follow, subscribe, leave a like, a review, all the stuff. Smash that button, whatever it is, wherever you get your podcasts. Fly on the Wall is executive produced by Dana Carvey and David Spade, Jenna Weiss-Berman of Odyssey, Charlie Finan of Brillstein Entertainment, and Heather Santoro. The show's lead producer is Greg Holtzman.